This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Milton.
Ми не залишимо без нашої відповіді жодну агресивну.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said global pressure on Russia had to be increased significantly during his nightly video address on Thursday. Zelensky also said the talks on Ukraine joining the European Union should begin this year. But the EU has made addressing corruption a requirement for Ukraine joining the 27-member bloc, and that process usually takes multiple years. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen visited Kyiv on Thursday with a delegation of more than a dozen officials that promised military, financial, and political aid before the first anniversary of the February 24th invasion.
We have agreement on how we will continue to work forward, both from a legislative standpoint as well as executive and community-based solutions. But the focus will always be on public safety.
That's Stephen Horsford, the chair of the U.S. Congressional Black Caucus, after a meeting Thursday with President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. The meeting centered on police reform and public safety. It came one day after the funeral of Tyree Nichols, a black man who died in January, 3 days after being beaten by police in Memphis, Tennessee. Biden said during the meeting that he talked with Nichols' family by phone and expressed hope that what he called the dark memory of that case would spur action. U.S. House Republicans have voted to oust Democratic Representative Ilhan Omar from the House Foreign Affairs Committee. The vote in a raucous session on Thursday to remove the Somali-born Muslim lawmaker came after her past comments critical of Israel. The Minnesota Democrat has apologized for comments that she said she came to understand were anti-Semitic. From Washington, you're listening to VOA News. The United States on Thursday called on the Sudanese government to use all available legal means to reverse a decision this week to release a Sudanese man facing the death penalty in connection with the killing of a U.S. diplomat in 2008. State Department spokesperson Ned Price told reporters the U.S. government called on the Sudanese government to exercise all available legal means to reverse the decision.
The Sudanese claim that the Granville family had extended forgiveness is false. We call on the Sudanese government to exercise all available legal means to reverse this decision and to rearrest Abu Zaid.
Abdel Raouf Abu Zaid was found guilty, along with others, in the killing of American John Granville and a Sudanese colleague, both of whom worked for the U.S. Agency for International Development and were killed by gunmen in Khartoum. President Biden was joined by a former president Thursday, marking the 30th anniversary of the landmark Family and Medical Leave Act. AP's Ed Donahue has more.
It was the first bill President Bill Clinton signed when he took office in 1993.
After all these years, I still have more people mention the Family Leave Act to me than any other specific things I did.
30 years later, President Biden is pushing to expand what Bill Clinton signed into law.
No American should ever have to choose between a paycheck and take care of a family member or taking care of themselves.
Paid family leave didn't make it into the slimmed down climate and health care bill that the president signed in August. Ed Donahue, Washington.
Fighter jets were ready to go after a Chinese spy balloon was spotted over the western United States. AP's Lisa Dwyer has more.
Fighter jets, including F-22s, were ready to shoot down the balloon if ordered by the White House. The defense officials said that what concerned them about this launch was the altitude at which the balloon was flying and the length of time it lingered over a location. No specifics were given on which location and no word on how large the balloon is, but it's large enough for commercial pilots to see it.
That's AP's Lisa Dwyer reporting. The United Nations says its humanitarians will not leave Afghanistan and will continue delivering life-saving aid, despite Taliban restrictions on Afghan women's work for non-governmental organizations. The announcement comes as some international aid agencies have suspended their operations in Afghanistan to protest the 2022 order by the de facto Taliban government banning local women from working for NGOs. The Taliban say the restrictions on women's work and education are temporary until they figure out how this can be done within religious confines. Iran on Thursday blamed Israel for a drone attack that took place Saturday in the central Iranian city of Isfahan. A letter posted on the website of Iran's mission to the UN said preliminary indications were that Israel was responsible for what it called an attempted act of aggression. Marissa Milton, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Friday, February 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Russia strikes eastern Ukraine as Kyiv pushes for new European Union sanctions against the Kremlin.
Reports say among the EU's expected deliverables will be announcements to double the number of Ukrainian troops training in EU member states to 30,000.
A top U.S. diplomat is heading to China to put guardrails on ties with Beijing.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is said to be the first top U.S. diplomat to visit China since 2018.
And Pakistani officials say a suicide bomber who killed dozens of worshippers wore a police uniform. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Ukrainian officials say Russian missiles have struck residential areas in an eastern city for the second time in 24 hours. Thursday's attack came while top European Union officials held talks in Kyiv with the Ukrainian government as the war with Russia approaches its one-year milestone. The latest strike in Kramatorsk came as rescue crews searched for survivors in the rubble of an apartment building struck by a Russian missile late Wednesday that killed at least three people and wounded 21 others. Ukraine has asked the European Union to quickly impose new sanctions against Russia ahead of a summit Friday with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, aimed at showing solidarity with Ukraine and to announce more humanitarian funding and troop training. But from Paris, Lisa Bryan reports for VOA, the EU is likely to disappoint Ukraine's hopes for quick membership in the bloc.
Reports say among the EU's expected deliverables will be announcements to double the number of Ukrainian troops training in EU member states to 30,000 and nearly $28 million in demining assistance. The summit, which includes EU Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell and European Council President Charles Michel, follows an uptick in new weapons pledges by the EU and the United States, which includes German and American tanks and French César howitzers.
The crucial summit, it's very symbolic that all three leaders of the institutions are going to Ukraine. This sends a very positive signal of EU support.
Amanda Paul is senior policy analyst at the Brussels-based European Policy Center.
But at the same time, Ukrainians obviously want significant substance to come out of this summit. They will be looking for ongoing commitment from the EU in terms of financial assistance for reconstruction and recovery, for military aid, humanitarian assistance.
The summit comes ahead of an expected surge in fighting by both Russians and Ukrainians as the weather warms up. German Marshall Fund analyst Jacob Kierkegaard says that makes beefing up Ukraine's arsenal all the more urgent.
Ukraine needs more, not in 3 months. It needs them now. So there is clearly, in my opinion, a need to continue the acceleration of weapons supplies for Ukraine.
Kyiv is also hoping for EU backing for its goal to join the 27-member bloc in 2 years. Friday's summit follows a wave of dismissals and resignations of senior Ukrainian officials over corruption allegations. Cracking down on corruption will be a key EU membership demand. But most observers believe Brussels is unlikely to fast-track Ukraine's membership. Other applications take years to be granted. Analyst Kierkegaard believes European officials need to manage Ukraine's expectations, but also provide encouragement.
Overall, I don't think there's any doubt that this will be a meeting that will solidify EU support for Ukraine financially, militarily, humanitarian, etc. So this is a good opportunity to give Ukraine yet another push on what, unfortunately, will be a very, very long road towards full EU membership.
The European Policy Center's Amanda Paul says Ukraine has made progress over the past decade in cracking down on corruption. Ukraine's civil society watchdogs can be a powerful force, she says, in ensuring that continues. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The United States says Russia is violating the New START treaty, the last remaining nuclear arms treaty between the two countries. In August, Russia suspended inspection of its nuclear facilities as required by the treaty. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
The State Department says Russia is violating the New START treaty, which puts a cap on the number of strategic nuclear warheads that the U.S. and Russia can deploy, and the deployment of land and submarine-based missiles and bombers to deliver them. The U.S. says Russia is not allowing inspections of its facilities as required by the treaty. But State Department Deputy Spokesperson Vedant Patel says Russia can easily get back in compliance.
There is a clear path for returning. All Russia needs to do is to allow inspection activities on its territory, just as it did for years under the New START treaty, and meet in a session of the Bilateral Consultative Commission. There is nothing preventing Russian inspectors from traveling the United States and conducting inspections.
Russian officials have blamed the U.S., noting Washington's support of Ukraine as it defends itself against Russia's invasion, and suspended U.S. inspections of Russian nuclear facilities in August. But Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said Russia still wants to hold on to the New START treaty.
No matter how sad the situation is at the present time, some illusions must stay. We consider the continuation of this treaty very important. It is at least not viable, but hypothetically viable. Otherwise, we see that the United States has actually destroyed the legal framework.
One analyst told VOA there are a couple of reasons why Moscow may be violating the treaty. Richard Weitz is director of the Center for Political Military Analysis at the Hudson Institute.
At best, Russia is trying to buy some more concessions from the U.S. about perhaps get more inspections of U.S. systems. At worst, Russia's holding the strategic arms control process hostage to the Russia-Ukraine war.
Russia has also refused to rule out using a tactical nuclear weapon in Ukraine, which has fed global fears of a nuclear catastrophe. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Thank you, Cindy. Russia seems to have outmaneuvered the United States on the African continent. So says veteran journalist and author Joyce M. Davis, opinion editor of Penn Live and president of the World Affairs Council in Pennsylvania. This despite the recent U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in Washington and visits to Africa by high-level U.S. officials, including Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen's meeting in Pretoria last month with South Africa President Cyril Ramaphosa. Joy says South Africa greeted Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov with open arms on his recent tour. She explains to VOA's Carol Van Dam why South Africa and other African countries are ignoring the Biden administration's call to treat Russia as a global pariah.
Clear explanation. It's the historic ties. It's Russia was supportive of the ANC and the movements against apartheid and all of that. And so they're not just going to slap them away, right? And they're not just going to be puppets necessarily of what the U.S. may want. So somehow we can get that a little bit, right? But these others, the outstretched arms that they've been greeting these other places is clearly because these authoritarian leaders want support themselves. They want a strong ally. And they found it. They found it with Vladimir Putin, who does not require anything like human rights or anything like anything for his friendship.
Probably that's the difference between the U.S. and our counterparts in Russia. We do expect that.
And it's not to say that the U.S. is an angel, has always done the right thing and still does sometimes gets things wrong. But I think the point is we do have scruples. And we do force our leaders and our foreign policy officials to have some scruples and to be accountable. Russia and Vladimir Putin have none. They don't care if they are massacring their people. And in fact, there are some reports that their Wagner mercenaries might help them do it. So again, we're looking at, unfortunately, the United States and the West being a little bit at a disadvantage because we do have some sense of morality. We do hold our leaders accountable for what happens in other countries at our behest. And nobody's doing that with Vladimir Putin.
In the UN, 28 African countries voted to condemn Russia, not a majority. As the war reaches its one-year mark and the U.S. is making more concerted push in African nations to get on board, do you expect sentiments to change, be a little movement?
You never know. I mean, the United States has made a very good point of helping some African leaders realize that some of the hardships, including the food shortages that they're facing, is because of the war. It's because of what Putin is doing. People are also, they're also watching very carefully. I mean, it's not like Vladimir Putin is having, and Russian troops are having, that much great success in Ukraine, right? This thing, there's even reports that you could be losing. So they're seeing all of that. So I can't say that I don't expect to see some movement away in some quarters. But what, I guess the point is that there are many still authoritarian leaders who need support. They need weapons. And Russia is willing to give them those weapons because guess what? Russia is looking for revenue. It's looking for perhaps access to gold mines, diamond mines, all of those things, cobalt, that it can use to try to offset some of the sanctions that have been placed on the country since its invasion with Ukraine and even before. But some countries, I do think, will move in another direction. It just depends upon the developments as we go forward in Ukraine.
That's Joyce M. Davis, veteran author and journalist and president of the World Affairs Council. She was speaking to my colleague Carol Van Dam from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken is heading to China as Washington seeks to put guardrails on ties with Beijing amid rising tensions. But as State Department Bureau Chief Nick Ching reports, expectations are low for Blinken's trip to reset the fraught relations between the two countries.
U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken is said to be the first top U.S. diplomat to visit China since 2018.
Competition is one thing, conflict is another, and it's strongly in our interest to make sure that even as we compete very, very vigorously, we avoid competition veering into conflict. One of the ways you do that is making sure that you actually have good lines of communication.
The U.S. Treasury has sanctioned a Chinese company for providing satellite imagery of Ukraine to help Russia's Wagner mercenary military group. And Russia's war on Ukraine will be high on Blinken's agenda. While the United States is seeking to re-engage China on the issues of counter-narcotics and climate change, analysts say the two countries are not heading to a substantial change in the status of their relationship. Congressional critics question China's intentions, saying the U.S. should not engage in talks for the sake of talking, with Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy proposing to visit Taiwan later this year. Ready? U.S. officials and congressional members are cautioning China against military escalation. Nike Chin, VOA News.
In other news, Pakistani police say a suicide bomber who killed 101 people in northwestern city of Peshawar this week had disguised himself by wearing a police uniform. The provincial police chief said on Thursday that the guards at the site assumed the bomber was a police officer, their colleague, and did not search him. He says the bomber had been identified and police are close to arresting the network that was behind the attack. It was one of the deadliest attacks in years in Peshawar, the capital of Pakistani province. The force of the explosion caused the roof of the 50-year-old mosque, supported by outside walls but without pillars, to cave in. Some 225 people were wounded. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. The U.S. State Department, in partnership with the African Union, the UN and others, has kicked off an initiative to help African farmers and governments to prepare for and adapt to food security challenges caused by climate change. VOA's Mariama Diallo has the story.
U.S. Special Envoy for Global Food Security, Dr. Kerry Fowler, launched the new program Wednesday at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington.
Crops adapted to climate, pest, diseases, and the needs of the marketplace are a prerequisite for food security. Poor soils don't produce rich harvest.
Fowler, who recently visited Zambia and Malawi, warned there is an urgent need to develop crops that are prepared to withstand the effects of climate change and the agricultural productivity demands of Africa's growing population.
At a time when Africa is experiencing historic weather extremes and as population growth is increasing, we see a real opportunity promoting soil health and climate-resistant crops in Africa. By the end of the century, as you probably know, Africa will be the world's most populated continent. Yet already, there are 300 million people who are food insecure on the continent.
He said that historically, most adaptation efforts have focused on a handful of crops, such as maize, rice, and wheat, but that attention should include other lesser-known crops that are rich in vitamins and micronutrients.
Other crops, such as grains, such as sorghum and millet and teff, many of the legumes, almost all of the root and tuber crops, and the hundreds of traditional and indigenous African fruits and vegetables have received much less attention. Not surprisingly, their yields are low and their potential has been unrealized. For many of these crops, there has never been a single scientifically trained plant breeder working on them in all of agricultural history.
This initiative is being launched in partnership with the African Union and the UN Food and Agricultural Organization. Ambassador Cindy McCain, U.S. Permanent Representative to the UN agencies in Rome, was at the launch. She said in a moment of overlapping crises, armed conflicts, COVID-19, and climate change are straining global food systems. And that is affecting everyone, especially the more vulnerable around the globe.
Throughout my travels as a U.S. ambassador to UN agencies in Rome, I've seen the effects of conflict, water scarcity, and extreme weather conditions from Kenya to Madagascar, from Sri Lanka to Laos, and more. As global leaders sought climate solutions in COP27 in Egypt last year and at the Negev Forum in UAE last month, it is clear that we must leverage science and technology and innovation in agriculture to feed a growing population, and it demands a united global effort.
Fowler said in addition to FAO and the AU, other entities such as the Rockefeller Foundation, Columbia University, and the CGIAR are also involved in this effort. He said this is like a potluck dinner where the State Department brings some resources and maybe a main dish, but other partners need to contribute to the effort in order to make it a success. Fowler noted the process outlined is part scientific and part consensus and commitment building. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
Australia has announced more sanctions against Myanmar and Iran. Foreign Affairs Minister Penny Wong said repression and violence force the government to act. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Australia joins the United States, Canada and the United Kingdom in imposing new sanctions on Myanmar. Analysts say the measures add to the pressure on Myanmar's military authorities, 2 years after it overthrew the civilian government, effectively led by Aung San Suu Kyi, who's since been jailed. Australia will target several members of Myanmar's governing State Administration Council and two army-run corporations. Speaking to reporters in London Tuesday, Australian Foreign Affairs Minister Penny Wong said the measures were a response to the crushing of dissent in Myanmar.
After careful deliberation and consultation, Australia is imposing additional autonomous sanctions on those directly responsible for the military coup and ongoing repression and violence. This includes targeted financial sanctions and travel bans on 16 individuals who are key figures in the military regime and targeted financial sanctions on two military-controlled entities.
Canberra has also imposed sanctions on 16 Iranian law enforcement, political and military officials. Australia has also followed other Western countries in launching targeted financial penalties against four Iranian individuals and four companies that make or sell drones to Russia, which are believed to have been used against Ukrainian civilians and infrastructure. The European Union and Britain are reportedly considering whether to declare Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the organisation that enforces the government's policies, to be an extremist organisation. Wong said the Myanmar sanctions would stay in place until Canberra sees improvements for people on the ground and moves towards the restoration of democracy. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter. Next up, policing in America. The death of George Floyd was supposed to trigger a movement for police reform in the United States, but Tyre Nichols, a 29-year-old black man from Tennessee, became yet another casualty of police brutality. What will it take to end excessive use of force by police in America? We'll talk about it next on Encounter, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Around the clock, The Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. On to next time, I am Gina Rofo in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The United States is offering a reward for information leading to the arrest or conviction of the terrorist that attacked a military base in Kenya 3 years ago. On January 5th, 30 to 40 insurgents belonging to the Jaish-e-Ayman unit of the Al-Shabaab terrorist group launched an attack on the Monda Bay airfield in Kenya. The lengthy firefight that followed resulted in the deaths of one U.S. soldier and two U.S. civilian contractors. On January 5th, 3 years later to the day after the attack, the U.S. Department of State's Reward for Justice, or RFJ program, administered by the Diplomatic Security Service, offered a reward of up to $10 million for information leading to the arrest or conviction in any country of Malim Ayman, the leader of al-Shabaab's Jaish-e-Ayman unit, or for any individual who was involved in the attack, helped to plan or support it, or otherwise aided or abetted the commission of the attack. Malim Ayman was previously named by the Department of State as a specially designated global terrorist under Executive Order 13224, as amended. He also was designated by the United Nations Security Council's Somalia Sanctions Committee, pursuant to Paragraph 8A of Resolution 1844. If you or anyone you know has information on Malim Ayman's activities and whereabouts, or of others who are responsible for the 2020 attack on the Monda Bay airfield in Kenya, please contact Rewards for Justice via Signal, Telegram, or WhatsApp at +1-202-702-7843 worldwide, or at +254-7187-12336 in Kenya, and +252-68-43-43-308 in Somalia. All information will be kept strictly confidential. More information about this reward offer is located on the Rewards for Justice website. All credible reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.